scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, let's get at it. Happy Monday on November 21st. We're underway with hour one of Flames Talk, coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. My name is Pat Steinberg. Available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go get Flames Talk wherever you get your podcasts. And yes, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media with us as well from lovely Philadelphia as we look back on Saturday's 5-4 shootout win over the Florida Panthers and start looking ahead to the final four games of this six-game road trip for the Flames. What's going on, Wes? How we doing?
I'm good, buddy. I'm not quite as good as I was last time we chatted when I was looking out at the ocean. But
yeah, I saw that picture. You know, that was good.
Still pretty good.
That was fun on Saturday afternoon, man. You were there watching from afar, and it was like that was as engaging a game as I can remember watching on the road this year, just because all of the hype that went into it and all of the hoopla that went into it and getting ready for it and hearing from Jonathan Huberdeau and hearing from Matthew Tkachuk and hearing from Mackenzie Weegar. And then the game has lots of swings and Florida won't go away and the Flames stay resilient and they come away with a 5-4 shootout win. Like, that was just a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to Tuesday's game, a week from Tuesday, the 29th, when these two teams meet again. Because if we get anything like what we saw on Saturday, that game at the Dome should be a lot of fun.
You know, it's something we talked about post-game, our buddy Eric Francis and I. Like, how often do those games just not quite live up to the hype, right? How often do you hype these games and you know, to use the old cliche, circle them on the calendar, and then you get to them and it's just sort of, that was okay. And in the early stages of Saturday's game, that was probably the case. It didn't look right away like it was going to live up to the hype, but that was such a fun hockey game. It was, you know, all the guys who were in the spotlight for various reasons ended up playing a role in the outcome. It just, That was the best game I've covered so far this season. If you were sitting at home, you know, tuning in the late afternoon or early evening, there was just nothing to complain about. What a great hockey game.
Well, and you could tell that, I mean, even after the game, and this is from afar, you could tell that it meant a lot to those two former Panthers. Here's Mackenzie Weegar, Jonathan Huberdeau both talked post-game on Saturday, and you could just tell that it meant a lot going in there and also coming away with a win.
I wanted to beat these guys really bad. You know, they're chirping on the other side and whatnot. And, you know, that to get the 2 points feels really good against that team.
It was good. It was obviously, you know, here. And obviously wanted to win too. So it was big. I think, you know, getting the golden shootout here. So that was cool.
You were there. You spoke to them after the game. Like, how That did mean a lot to them. They seemed pretty fired up about the way that one played out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a little bit of a relief to have it done as well. You know, it was such an emotional 48 hours, starting with Friday's practice at their old practice facility. You know, combined for 15 or 16 seasons with the Florida Panthers, they knew that place like the back of their hand. And so it was emotional starting, I think, right when the plane basically touched down in Fort Lauderdale. And then the coolest moment, and it's really too bad that this wasn't on live TV, because it was one of the more sort of goosebumps worthy moments I've covered in my career, was when it was just the two of them left on the ice. And when I say the two of them, I mean Mackenzie Weegar and Jonathan Huberdeau, at the end of pregame warmup, and you could just hear the crowd get louder and louder. And it was essentially a standing ovation at the end of warmup, which you just don't see ever. And so to start the afternoon like that, to end it obviously with Jonathan Huberdeau scoring a really important goal to essentially keep the shootout going.
Yeah, and
you could tell what it meant to them. And you could tell, I think, that it just wouldn't have been the same if they were standing there talking about a 5-4 shootout loss, and obviously a tip of the cap to Rasmus Anderson. That was one of the filthiest fakes I've seen in a shootout. He basically had an empty netter, which isn't supposed to happen against an NHL goaltender. So just a lot of drama, a very cool ending, and an emotional, entertaining, just one of those games you're not going to kind of forget being there
can
for.
Can you remember a shootout attempt starting that deep? Like, Rasmus was hanging out with Markstrom when he started that attempt. I was like, what is he doing? Where, like, he's starting from behind his own net almost. I don't remember a guy winding up quite like that.
He was not lacking steam when he got to center ice. He actually slowed down a little bit as he headed into the zone. But you're right, I thought he was going to try and do the mountain climber or whatever Bob Hartley called that old bag
yeah.
drill. Cause he was down. He was basically close enough to high five Markstrom and then up the ice as fast as he could go. And what a move. Just, that's a guy who has 17 career goals in the NHL. If you were ever wondering how talented every single guy in the NHL is 100%. With the puck on his stick. Oh my goodness. What a goal.
And also just quickly as we're talking about it, like credit to Markstrom. I know that there was the one unfortunate gaffe, which I think was on more than just him, but the him getting stripped behind the net early in the second that opened the door for the Panthers to come back. But I thought Markstrom did a really good job, and credit to him shutting the door after that first shootout goal. So Lundell comes in, filthy move, goes bar down, and the Panthers are in early control of the shootout, and then he shuts the door from there on out. That was kind of a very subtle but important part of getting the 2 points, too.
Yeah, absolutely. What he did, you know, the way I put it was he not only coughed up the puck on that first goal he allowed, he did cough up the momentum, and that put his team in a little bit of a tough spot, and I think all you can say about the goaltender is if you cough up the momentum like that, you better be sort of up to task after that. And he absolutely was. That turned into, you know, that goal gave the Florida Panthers, I thought, some life in that game. Not that they didn't have any life early, but that really started to tilt the ice for a little while. And I just thought Jacob Markstrom's response was really good. He made several in regulation really good saves on Sasha Barkov, especially. Like he absolutely couldn't buy one. And then to get to the shootout, he makes one really good save in overtime. And then to shut the door the way he did in the shootout, to allow his team with only 2 goals in 5 rounds to win it, you have to give him a lot of credit. I think that's why he's in the net tonight in Philadelphia. He showed a lot of, I'm not sure what I guess a lot of resolve. Like
it's a good word.
Talks all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, he talks all the time about all you can do after those, you know, turds sometimes is just focus on the next shot. And you could kind of see that live in action on Saturday.
And I thought it was actually crazy because I know that Florida came back to tie it 3 times. But, you know, the very next shift, within 10 seconds of the puck dropping again, Markstrom was back behind the net cutting off a rim, which I thought was just really important because, you know, inevitably got the texts after the game on Saturday saying, he's got to stop doing that. Don't wander. And I'm completely the opposite. He's one of the better goalies in the NHL of getting out behind the net and cutting down those rims and either stopping a zone entry for a team or allowing his team to exit quickly. Like that's a really important part of Calgary and a lot of teams' transition game is being able to stop that puck behind the net, and Markstrom's very good at it. And I know there was the McDavid goal in the Edmonton game and the goal that was scored by Colin White in the game on Saturday, but like he's got to continue to do that, and there are going to be mistakes, there are going to be close calls, but that doesn't mean he should stop doing that on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's kind of like sticking with the run game after your running back fumbles. If you're a team that has to pound the ball on the ground to win football games, when your running back fumbles, you can't just say, screw it, we're just going to pass from now on. And Jacob Markstrom cutting off that dump in behind the net and trying to fish it off the dasher, which was the case on the McDavid goal, like that is a big part of how Daryl Sutter's play fast system has to work. He has to be the guy transitioning it quickly before the other team can establish the forecheck. And so, yeah, you hate to see ones like Saturday happen. Colin White, I believe it was, tracks him down behind the net and steals the puck. It's an uncontested wraparound. You hate to see those, but you can't go away from it. You can't call timeout and say, hey, guys, forget how we transition the puck. Let's do something different now. And so kudos to Jacob Markstrom for sticking with it, because it's a different team. It's a different look if he doesn't.
Few texts that come in as we're having this conversation at 960-960. Pat, that was the Olli Jokinen shootout move in Florida, no less. Yeah, the Jokinen move, that was Olli's old patented thing, was starting way back in his own zone before coming in. So maybe Rasmus did get it from Olli.
There was an Olli Jokinen jersey in the house on Saturday.
Ooh,
too. So. That's
one of the true hardcore Panther fans. I like that.
that's a deep dig there.
That is a deep cut. Guys, what do you think Markstrom said to Tkachuk in the shootout? How good was that? Him holding that puck up and showing it right to Matthew? I had to turn my mic off during the game because I laughed so hard at that. He made the stop. Matthew Tkachuk is so gifted during those shootouts, and he just came in and blasted a slap shot, and Markstrom barely moved on it, but he showed that puck right to Matthew, and that was also one of the low-key best parts of that game on Saturday.
And didn't it look like Tkachuk might have said something to Markstrom after he set up Reinhardt's power play goal?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's kind of how it started, because I thought, and it's difficult when you're not, don't get me wrong, I love being at the games. There's no place I'd rather be. But when you don't have PVR to go back a couple times, sometimes you're going to miss a couple things. And so I thought Markstrom actually took a chop at him after that power play goal, but I couldn't say for sure. And so I think that started a little earlier. We've seen, you know, that's vintage Matthew Tkachuk, the kind of back to the boards from the goal line. It used to be Elias Lindholm who would tee up in the slot on a power play with Sam Reinhardt the other day. But I think he might have said something then, and so the shootout might have just been a continuation of that.
Loved it. Here was a little bit of Matthew postgame on Saturday, by the way.
How good did it feel to get that tying goal there late in that third period?
I mean, it felt good to get it to overtime. It felt like we were dominating them. We were down 4-3 somehow. And, you know, they came out. They played solid. The start didn't give us much, but then we took over, like, starting the second period. And seemed like they were hanging on a little bit in the third. But, you know, then even after it was 4-4, you know, they had some looks as well. And, it was back and forth probably in the third, probably more than we would have liked.
Did that goal mean just a little bit more with it coming against Calgary?
No.
What was the atmosphere like out there? Any different considering there was, you know, the reunion game with you against Calgary, Hubie and Leeds against this team?
Yeah. Fans are unbelievable here. I loved it. I loved playing in front of them. They were awesome tonight. It was packed. I love playing here so much, and the fans are a huge part of it. And they've welcomed me with open arms. And I've said it a million times, I truly love being here, and I've loved my time so much. And they're a huge part of it.
So that was Matthew Tkachuk, little post game after Saturday's loss for his team to the Flames. I thought we'd get a little bit of that in too, because that was fun. They play again on Tuesday of next week. Couple of other texts come in from Trevor. You need to also think about how much goalies playing the puck saves defensemen from getting hit all the time. 100%. And this says, are we not going to address the Panthers god-awful palm tree jerseys? I didn't mind them, Wes. You saw them in person. How'd they look up close and personal?
I honestly think they're awesome.
Okay. I like them too.
I think they're absolutely awesome. Yeah, I really do. And I'm not a fan of every, what are we on, the reverse retro or now, whatever it is now. I'm not a fan of all of them, but yeah, that's a good one for me. I like it.
It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, Hour 1 Flames Talk on this Monday. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan text line is open, as always, at 960-960. I want to dive into this because as we get set for Monday night's game in Philadelphia, ahead of that game, after morning skate today, Daryl Sutter was asked about one defenseman in particular, and that is Nikita Zadorov. And he scored another goal against the Panthers and he scored that 2-0 goal when he jumped up on the rush. He's been shooting the puck more than he ever has in his NHL career, and he's really turned into one of the more important players on that Flames blue line, and the head coach absolutely agreed as he spoke on Monday morning.
He's been our best player in the physical part of the game, though. Execution part of the game, been our best defenseman, clearly.
Has that been all season for you?
Pretty, you know what, I think once it's probably because not having partners, right, that I can say that. I mean, whoever he's played with he's carried them. So we need a little bit more. You know, that's a real positive in saying that about Z. Mm-hmm. But it's also saying that there's other guys got to be better players for us.
What are maybe the assets of his game you've seen him use?
Energy, maturity in his game from start of season last year to now, in terms of his knowing what the score is, knowing who's on the ice, things like that that you talked to him about, using his stick properly, being a better penalty killer, still maintaining a physical presence without penalties.
So that was Daryl Sutter talking about Nikita Zadorov, the head coach of the Flames, and that's been a constant refrain, Wes. Like, this is not the first time we've heard the head coach speak glowingly about Big Z. Like, this has been going all the way back to training camp, and even what he said at the end of last season about how good Zadorov was for them in the playoffs. It's just, this has turned into a really positive story, and the head coach has been singing this guy's praises for a long time now.
Yeah, now, like, that's hallmark sort of stuff from Daryl Sutter today. That's about as glowing as Daryl Sutter gets. And that really struck me. You're right, we have heard it before. I don't think anyone was blindsided by the comments, but to say he's clearly been our best defenseman, and then to, you know, go one step further and say that he's carried whatever partner that he's been with. I mean, we chatted with Nikita Zadorov a few minutes later, and he said a huge credit for his play has to go to Mackenzie Weegar. He feels like there's a whole lot of chemistry there. But what we heard from Daryl Sutter today, absolutely about the strongest compliment you're going to get from the Flames head coach. And what I was struck by, and I know you have some audio queued up there for a second, so what I was struck by is that this did not start very well in Calgary, right? Nikita Zadorov and Daryl Sutter seemed like a really awkward fit at first. If you go back to last fall, he was a scratch 5 games in a row. He couldn't even get in the Flames lineup. And so I think that's what makes it such a neat story. You know, we know Daryl Sutter likes his energy. He's sort of, I think, learned to live with some of the mistakes that can come with the aggressive way that he plays. But if you're willy-nilly with the puck, that doesn't fly with Daryl Sutter. And although he is still guilty of some giveaways, I think he's really tightened that part up a lot too. And I just think that sort of embracing Daryl Sutter's style and embracing the way he can be an impact player for the Flames, I think that's been the real neat part of the Nikita Zadorov story for me.
Here's a little bit. You caught up with Nikita a little bit after those comments from Daryl, and here's just a little bit of this chat with Wes and Nikita Zadorov going off of those. That's some really high praise from the head coach.
You can see when he trusts me on the ice, you know, like it's a pleasure to play big man. It's a big situation, like I said before. So, I mean, it's great to hear it. I mean, all I try to do to play my best hockey so we can win some hockey games, you know, for sure.
Struck by the fact that you say you can really feel Daryl trust in you, because it didn't start that well. How did we get here? How did it sort of build to this point?
Well, I mean, when you get the coach for 2 years who's winning Jack Adams, and he kind of know from making decent players or good players, you know, like, so I think that definitely helps. You know, it didn't start well because I just wasn't a player who I am right now. You know, it took me a little bit of time to figure out how to work with him, how to play his system, what he wants to see on the ice of me. So I think that's definitely
the case in this thing, you know, like I think just takes time, you know, how you respond from what coach wants to see. That's what was a big thing for me.
So it was never, oh my God, he doesn't like me. It was, hey, this guy knows what he's doing, so I got to figure out how to make this work.
I'm not a person who's crying and bitching. I think I'm always been like a guy. If there's some challenges, I would love to face them, and you need to just go through it. You know, like nobody's gonna feel sorry for you at the end of the day. There's so many young kids coming in, they're stealing jobs and everything. There's so much competition in this league, so there's just no time for all this bullshit. You know, so you just have to tough it up, man up, and then go and play hockey.
Wes, that's Nikita Zadorov, by the way, in conversation with Wes. This guy has been one of my favorite stories going back to last year, and I said it all throughout training camp in the preseason. Like I felt like there was going to be a time this year where Zadorov was going to be in, because last year he was a third pair D all year, right? I thought this year there's going to be a time where, like, geez, how do you get Zadorov more time? How do you get him into the, because he's kind of like, he's a top four defense, been playing on the third pair. How do we get Zadorov more 5-on-5 time? I thought there was going to be that type of conversation about how he can get himself into the top four. I didn't think we'd be having it necessarily less than 20 games in the middle of November. And I didn't think that he would make his presence known as much as he has early on. And here he is. Wes, imagine they don't sign him on July 13th. Imagine he's somewhere else right now, how different things would be for the Flames.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I chat all the time about, obviously, Daryl Sutter is very honest in the media, but he talks with ice time. Coaches talk with ice time.
100%. Well,
you know, Nikita Zadorov leads the team in shorthanded ice time this season. He's second in average shorthanded ice time with Chris Tanev, obviously playing more minutes when he's in the lineup. But so you got a guy who is a crucial part of your penalty kill. He's going to play on the second power play tonight. That's something we started to see in Florida. We're going to see that continue with Nikita Zadorov getting a chance on that second power play unit. That's only going to make him busier than he already is. And then it speaks volumes, doesn't it, that whether he is on the third pairing or Chris Tanev comes back and he's left on the second pairing, like Daryl Sutter and defense coach Ryan Huska, they have gone out of their way to make sure that Nikita Zadorov still plays big minutes. And that's because of how well he's done with them. I can really only think of one game where I thought Nikita Zadorov really struggled this year, and that's because him and Rasmus Anderson just seem to mix like oil and water as a pairing. We saw that one night and we saw it early last season too, and it just doesn't seem to work. But for the most part, and to your point, if they didn't have Nikita Zadorov, they would be in a bit of a pickle on the blue line. We're already talking about a team that's playing Dennis Gilbert, number 9, I would say, on their depth chart. And so Nikita Zadorov and the sort of stability that he's brought, not necessarily a word that you'd use with Nikita Zadorov very often, but the stability that he's brought has been so crucial for this Flames team.
And I agree. It's been an awesome story. And as you know, I just even listening to your chat there with him, I knew from the very first second, going back to whenever free agency was in 2021, because the time was all weird. But I knew from the first time that we interviewed him on this station, I was like, this dude's going to be a lot of fun to deal with. You could just tell that, like, because I don't know, like, sometimes you don't know, language barrier, all that type of stuff, but his English is outstanding, and just, I knew from the get-go he was going to be one of the guys that you just enjoyed dealing with, and it's only gotten better from there. Like, he's honest, he'll tell you if your question is stupid, he'll tell you if you think that your line of questioning is off, he's uncensored, he's unfiltered, like, he's turned into one of my favorite guys to talk to in the NHL.
Yeah, I'm relieved to hear that I'm not the only one who he's told my question is stupid. So that right there, obviously, if you've had that experience too, then it's not just me. He's awesome. He's insightful. He's engaging. He was telling a story today about growing up in the Russian Red Machine style hockey, which is what his youth coach kind of still believed in. He said, until he was 14 years old, if you dumped the puck in, you'd get benched. And so he was talking about, you know, what a major change it's been for him now to play in a system where you are dumping the puck in all the time. And so he's just a fun guy to chat with. He's a good story. And you're right. He's kind of a larger than life personality, unfiltered. And I just absolutely enjoy my conversations with him.
He's Wes Gilbertson. He's coming at us from Philadelphia as Post Media's Wes Gilbertson with us this hour on Flames Talk. My name is Pat Steinberg, back here in Calgary. We're hanging out in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. They're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's keep it going on this Monday. It's time for your Monday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, home of the Mercedes-Benz AMG GLC 43 with the 4MATIC all-wheel drive system. Perfect for winter. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. .ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. We've got Wes Gilbertson with us in Philadelphia. And now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames roundtable. Gents, let's start here. Michael Stone is back with the team. As we kind of suggested last week, pretty good chance that Michael Stone was going to rejoin them on this trip. He has. He's back with the Flames, and he took morning skate Monday in Philadelphia. But Dennis Gilbert has kind of been the one guy since Michael's departure that has been able to maybe step in and solidify things a little back there on the blue line. Maybe he gets returned to the Calgary Wranglers sometime this week. Maybe he doesn't. But, gents, what have we thought about Dennis Gilbert in his short time with the Flames?
Yeah, I think he's been solid. And that is great news that Michael Stone has joined the team on the road. I can't imagine they would have flown him from Calgary to Philadelphia if they didn't think he at least had a chance to play in the final four games of this season-long six-game road trip. So that's a good sign. But yeah, Dennis Gilbert, I think he's been solid. That would be the best way to describe him, in my opinion. He's played in the last two games. He's played in four of the last six games. So I think he's gaining some traction and gaining some trust from his teammates and from his coaches. Played a season-high 11 minutes and 29 seconds in his team's 5-4 shootout victory over the Panthers on Saturday. And I think he's been the best of the bunch when it comes to the guys who have tried to fill in for Michael Stone as the Flames' number six defenseman. And I think it's because he's played a fairly simple north-south game. He hasn't tried to do too much. He's jumped up and tried to get involved offensively on occasion, but for the most part, he's just tried to make sure that things are taken care of defensively. I think he's done a pretty good job killing plays, helping the Flames get the puck out, whether that's making a pass to his partner or to one of the forwards to help them break out. And I've liked his physicality, guys. He's a big, strong guy at 6'2", 216. He's used that size and that strength to his advantage. He's been in a couple of fights. The Flames don't have as many of those guys this season as they had last, so I think all in all, he's done a good job and just played fairly mistake-free hockey, which is what the coaches are asking that number six guy to do.
I think the really interesting thing for me that's shifted since we maybe last talked about the depth on defense is that I don't know that Daryl Sutter is now looking for a right-hander like Michael Stone to be the sixth defenseman. And don't get me wrong, I do expect Stone to get back in and get back in soon, but we know he prefers Mackenzie Weegar on his right side, and Pat and I just finished talking about what a good pair and the chemistry we've seen sort of develop between Nikita Zadorov and Mackenzie Weegar. And so now you've got Chris Tanev as the sort of odd man out in the big five, the guy without a partner, and that's where Dennis Gilbert's come in. He's a left-hander, and Daryl Sutter seems to want a lefty to play beside Chris Tanev. And so I absolutely agree with what Derek said about the physicality. You know, if there's been one knock for me on Dennis Gilbert, it's sort of the positioning or the not giving up body positioning in front of the net. We have seen a couple goals go in because he's allowed another guy to get body position in front. It's what happened on Matthew Tkachuk's deflection goal the other night. But for the most part, when you talk about a guy that you're calling up from the minors, a guy who hadn't played in the NHL for almost 2 years and still has only played 29, I believe, games at the top level, I think he's been more than serviceable. I do think he's helped provide some kind of bite on that back end, and whether it's just a stopgap until Michael Stone's ready, or whether there might be some more opportunities for a lefty on the blue line, it's hard to complain about what they've gotten out of him so far.
When I take a look at, first of all, to me, of all the guys, Mackey, DeSimone, Gilbert, I'm with you guys. I think Gilbert's been the one that has been the most solid, the most steady, all of that. And I like that he, more than any of the other guys, has just been able to keep it simple. You know, all three of Mackey, DeSimone, and Gilbert have been used in a very sheltered way, which isn't a surprise because, as we know, Daryl Sutter, Ryan Huska, they want to not put them in situations that are over their head, all that type of stuff. But Gilbert's the one guy who's been able to keep his head above water, even knowing that. You know, Mackey has been underwater, DeSimone underwater, whereas Gilbert has stepped in. He's been on the ice for 49 shot attempts, 4 and 30 against at 5-on-5. He's been on the ice for 7 high-danger scoring chances, 4 and 5 against, 18 scoring chances, 4, 12 against. And he's done so with, yeah, a high offensive zone start. But he's the one guy that's been able to be okay doing that. And, you know, the one game that he played, Derek, we were talking about it, I think it was after the Tampa game, where he... There was not one shot attempt against when he was on the ice in that game against Tampa. But he's been able to keep it simple. He's been able to, the way that they're using him, go out and more often than not, at the very worst, not hurt the team. And, you know, DeSimone, there were some turnovers that ended up in the back of Calgary's net. And Mackey, there were some turnovers and some mistakes that ended up in the back of Calgary's net. And there's been less of that with Gilbert. And I think he's done a really good job for what he's being asked to do to help stabilize things back there.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not about who's the best player. It's about who's the best fit. So when I think of the three guys that have been given an opportunity to fill in for Michael Stone on the Flames' third pairing, I would say that Nick DeSimone and certainly Connor Mackey have more upside offensively than Dennis Gilbert does. But that's not what you want or need from a third pairing guy. You just want a guy who's going to eat some minutes and who isn't going to hurt you. And I would say for the most part that Dennis Gilbert has done a good job of that. And Wes, you bring up an interesting point when it comes to Chris Tanev. I don't know about you fellas. I don't think he's 100%. He might not be close to 100%. So I don't hate the fact that he's not playing in their top four right now for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you cut back his minutes, you probably give him a better chance to start to inch closer to being 100%. And you can still use him on the penalty kill. He's your best penalty killing defenseman. There's no doubt about it. But those are hard minutes to play. So if you take away some 5-on-5 minutes from him, I think that probably keeps him a little bit fresher. But to number two, one of the great strengths of Chris Tanev throughout his career has been his ability to elevate his partner, especially when his partner doesn't have a lot of experience. I think about Quinn Hughes when he was with the Canucks. I think about Oliver Shillington last season. And now Dennis Gilbert, he's 26, so he's not a young guy, but he's an inexperienced guy at the NHL level. And Tanev, he just settles everybody down, but I would say especially his partner. So I think that as a third pairing, and I know there's been some mixing and matching in the second and third pairings of late, but I think it's been solid. And again, that's exactly what the Flames want and need from their number six guy, not named Michael Stone, because he could chip in offensively, as we know. But as far as his replacements, I think Gilbert's been the most solid of the group so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always hear Daryl Sutter, you know, talk about playing to what your greatest strength is. You know, one of the things Michael Stone brings is that howitzer of a slap shot, and we've seen him use it to his advantage a couple times before he got hurt. But that physicality and that simple, hard-on-pucks type style is what Dennis Gilbert can bring, and he has so far. To his credit, he certainly has, I think. And I'm sure lots of people have heard this story. I wrote about it early or late last week, and I know they mentioned it on the broadcast Saturday, but I just want to mention it one more time because I think it's such a neat story. So Dennis Gilbert in high school in Buffalo was the backup quarterback for his high school team at first. And the starter was none other than Chad Kelly, one of the heroes last night for the Toronto Argonauts. So there's a neat little Dennis Gilbert link to the big game last night.
I don't think the Argos, just a little CFL talk thrown in shamelessly from the CFL nerd. The Argos don't win the Grey Cup if McLeod Bethel Thompson doesn't get hurt and Chad Kelly comes in, because that change of pace changed the whole football game. I honestly, like, I've never seen an injury to a starting quarterback be more important than it was in the fourth quarter of Sunday's Grey Cup. It was unbelievable. It changed the because they're such drastically different quarterbacks. One guy comes in, changes the entire course of the football game, and his 20-yard scamper on 2nd and 15, which could have sealed it for the Bombers, was the most important play of the entire football game. So there's my CFL nerding out for a quick 2 seconds. And
if I can just add, Dennis Gilbert was really pumped for him today.
I heard that.
A congratulatory text last night. So that's a neat story. Dennis Gilbert will be the first to tell you he was not the best quarterback to come through that program, but awfully pumped for his former teammate.
Okay, it's our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills and Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Topic two, gents, three-point afternoon Saturday for Adam Rzyczka. First ever three-point game, first ever two-goal game in the NHL. Gents, are we witnessing this guy turn into an impact NHLer right in front of our eyes right now?
Well, he certainly has been in the games that he's played in this season. I mean, he's the only point-per-game player on the roster. Think about that for a second. The guy was a healthy scratch in 10 of the first 11 games. He's now played in 6 consecutive games, and he's got 8 points in 7 games this season. And I thought he was terrific on Saturday afternoon in Florida. As you mentioned, Pat, 2 goals, and I love the one that he ripped home from the slot on that faceoff play. That was a goal scorer's goal, and you know, 3 points in that 5-4 shootout victory over the Panthers. And he looks like a confident hockey player right now. Generally, when guys are shooting the puck a lot, like Adam is, that tells you they're confident. And why wouldn't he be confident with 8 points in 7 games so far this season, and playing on the first line with Elias Lindholm and Tyler Toffoli, and now playing in the second power play? And you know, the power plays had some luck of late. They've scored a goal in 3 straight games. But, you know, Adam Rzyczka, I think we knew he had all the tools. We were just waiting for him to put everything together. And I'm not going to lie, guys, I was starting to wonder if it was going to happen. Certainly, well, I was starting to wonder if it was going to happen as a member of the Flames, or if he maybe needed a change of scenery where he could go to a team that could use him a little higher in the lineup. But can't play any higher in the lineup than he's been playing since he came back in. And you know, he certainly had an impact. And when you think about what he's done in comparison to some other Flames players this season, guys who we had much higher expectations for, Andrew Mangiapane has 6 points in 17 games. Dylan Dubé has 4 points in 17 games. And then you've got Adam Rzyczka, who's got 8 points in 7 games. So he's played in 10 fewer games than those two guys who we had penciled into at least the top 9, if not the top 6. Some people had both Mangiapane and Dubé as first-line players at some point in time this season. So Rzyczka deserves a lot of credit. Fairly small sample size. And I would say the one question I have moving forward is, can he consistently play at the high level that he's been playing at of late? That's been his biggest knock throughout his career, going back to junior and certainly as a pro, is that he hasn't been consistent enough. He's been quite consistent during this short stretch, and he's made the most of the opportunity that Daryl Sutter has given him, playing on the top line and playing on the power play. So now it's just a matter of, can he continue to do this moving forward? And I think his leash has to be quite a bit longer now than it was 6 games ago, when I was convinced it was pretty short and he could wind up playing a bottom 6 role, or maybe right out of the lineup if he had a bad day or a bad night. But that hasn't happened. He's just continued to build and to build and to build, and to probably lengthen that leash, not only to stay in the lineup, but to stay in the prominent role that he's been playing in. So it's been a really exciting development for the Flames. And just thinking about something that Daryl Sutter said when talking about Nikita Zadorov earlier today. And Wes, I appreciate you tweeting out some quotes, because I think they're fascinating. But Sutter called Zadorov, I believe he said, clearly our best defenseman so far this season, which was him giving props to Zadorov, But it was also him saying that there are some other players who have to be better moving forward. So I'm going to give props to Ružička, kind of like Sutter gave props to Zadorov. But I'll also add that I still think there are a number of players, including Dubé and Mangiapane, but they're not the only ones. There are a number of players who will have to be better moving forward. And if they are, they'll try to steal Ružička's spot in the first line. If they aren't, who knows? Maybe he's there to stay.
I think what's really impressed me about Adam Ružička is I always thought when he was on the fourth line, he looked like a guy who was trying to sort of add some offense to the fourth line, which is not a knock necessarily. You want your fourth line to be capable of contributing, but now he looks like a guy whose top priority on the first line is forechecking. I think he's forechecking harder now than he was on the fourth line. And that just speaks to me to just acknowledging, I think, the opportunity that's in front of him. I think we all know that Jonathan Huberdeau is going to wind up on the top line eventually. Again, I think it only makes sense to try your best setup man with your best center at some point again. But right now, what Adam Ružička has done is taken that ball and just kind of run with it. He's been great on the forecheck. He has been in the right spots in terms of not chasing the puck back into his own end very often. You know, he's still showing some of that defensive responsibility that sort of hints at his background as a center. And then he's finishing. Derek, your point that everyone knew about the tools he had. Well, Nikita Zadorov said that earlier today about Adam Ružička. And we heard Elias Lindholm a few games ago say, we expect that out of him. We know what he's capable of. And I think we're seeing it. I think right in front of our eyes, we're seeing a guy finally put that skill set to the best use he can at the NHL level. And does it mean he's a first liner forever? I don't think so, not as a left winger, but it certainly gives the Flames more versatility than they had 7 games ago when he was still sitting in the press box.
Yep. And I think we are. Like, I think we are witnessing a guy that's turning himself into a full-time NHLer right in front of our eyes. And I know there is skepticism, and there remains, and I think understandable skepticism about the consistency and having to be able to do it over a longer period of time. But every game he plays, and it's not just the points. It's how he's using his frame. It's how he's using his size. It's how he's doing more things in the little things of the game with his stick positioning and continuing cycles and all that type of stuff. Yeah, I think we're watching a guy turn himself into a full-time NHLer right in front of our eyes. It's been a really cool story, and honestly, one of the more significant stories that we've seen all year long, because it's an area that the Flames needed to get some development somewhere in the organization from, and it looks like they're finally getting it.
Yeah, and Wes, I'm with you. I still think that sooner or later, and hopefully sooner rather than later, because it would mean that his game is continuing to trend in the right direction, Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be this team's first-line left winger. And that won't necessarily be an indictment on Adam Ružička. What a development it would be if he just turned himself into a top-nine forward on this team. Because we've been talking about all season long, guys. Flames want to add another top-nine or top-six winger. What if they've got that guy and they don't have to trade for that guy? I just think it's been a really important development of late. The Flames as a team, even though they didn't on Saturday, have struggled to score more this season than they did last season. They've also struggled to prevent their opponent from scoring more this season than they did last season. I think that's the biggest area where the team needs to get better moving forward. But, you know, Adam Ružička has not only scored some goals, he's scored some timely goals. And Pat, to your point, I've liked the physicality that he's played with. He's a big, strong guy. You guys have seen him out of his gear. He is cut out of a stone. And it's like the light bulb finally just came on for him. And he realizes that not only can he play in this league, but he can be an imposing player in this league with the size and the skill that he has. It's a really special combination, and it's been fun to kind of watch him come into his own. And I guess the last question is, how long will this last? Who knows? Maybe this is just the tip of the iceberg for Adam Ružička, and the guy's going to turn himself into an impact player in this league, not only short-term, but long-term. And that would be great for him and great for the Flames.
I think the biggest compliment you could maybe pay Adam right now is if they did trade tomorrow morning for a top nine forward, it's not him coming out of the top nine.
Yep.
There's a couple other candidates that might wind up on the fourth line, and we saw a couple of them wind up there at the start of this road trip, but it wouldn't be Adam Rzeczka, and I think that speaks to the role he's been on and the skill set that he has that I think has boosted optimism throughout the organization that, hey, listen, he's not going to maintain a point-per-game pace or a what's he shooting at, 25% or 33% or something. But I think he has the tools to continue to be a guy who can make a difference for this team. And I think he realizes it more than he ever has before.
It's going to be my life's work or my season's quest to convince you that Huberdeau and Backlund can be the fit that is long-term. That's going to be my, quest.
Long. Yeah, it might take you that long. You know what? I think Michael Backlund's played some really good hockey this season, but let's be honest, guys. After a great start to the season, Nazem Kadri has really fallen off, don't you think? And they're going to need more from that line with him and Dylan Dubé and Andrew Mangiapane. I thought that was their best line early in the season. I know they have the ability to be their best line, at least on some nights. And maybe tonight's the night those three guys get going.
Thank you, Derek. Go finish it off for us, Wes.
I was just going to say, Dylan Dubé hasn't scored since opening night. Man, did he need that one that he plunked off the post in Florida.
Just healed it. It was so close to being a sure thing. Do it again tomorrow, Derek. Thank you, pal.
Okay, see you soon.
Derek Wells, Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. From the Mercedes-Benz enthusiast, find the perfect present at the Mercedes-Benz boutique. Online at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca. With Wes, I'm Pat. This is Hour 1 of Flames Talk. This says, I see a lot of Joel Otto in Adam Rzeczka. Agree. Could be. I could see some of those comparisons, especially if Rzeczka continues to play the way that he has. This says, I'm going to say it's not 100% that Huberdeau ends up on the Lindholm line. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he stays with Backlund for the rest of the year. We'll see how that plays out as well. That's on the text line at 960-960. Wes, you ready for the best bets?
Hang on. Did you send that last one from your number?
I swear I didn't. Last numbers of my phone number are 0273. Last numbers of this one are 9255. It's not me.
Okay. I send me a screen cap. Just
I will. I will do. All right, it could just be a second. I could have a burner phone. It is time for our Monday Flames Talk Best Bets, brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only. 18 plus. Play responsibly. Quickly looking back to Friday's show, we went 1-1 on our best bets. We hit the Flames on the money line in Florida, but ended up missing on our Friday Bo Horvat shot prop. We had over 2.5 shots. He did not hit that. Only had one shot on Friday. So last week, best bets went 9-2. Wes, our best week ever, went 9-2. So we got a lot to live up to this week.
I'm impressed, buddy. I'm impressed. I do my own sound effects here. This is a polite golf clap.
It's good. I like that. I get it.
Yeah, not bad.
Picked it up perfectly. You're learning to be a radio guy every day.
It's magic. It's magic, isn't it?
Oh, unbelievable. Here's what we got for Monday in Philly. I'm going to go Carter Hart over 32.5 saves. That's paying -117 over at Bodog. Philly, one of the worst shot suppression teams in the league. Calgary, one of the best shot volume teams in the league. So I think Carter Hart's going to be busy against the Flames. So I'll go over 32.5 saves. That's paying -117. And on that same wavelength, I'm going to go Elias Lindholm over 2.5 shots. That's paying -110. So if you get them separately, Carter Hart over 32.5 saves, -117. Lindholm over 2.5 shots, -110. If you want to get fancy and parlay them, you're getting +254 over at Bodog. Depends how you want to do it. But those are your best bets on a Monday. Hart over 32.5 saves, Lindholm over 2.5 shots. And that's our Monday edition of Flames Talk Best Bets, brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only. 18 plus. Play responsibly.